We are here. This is it. This is 501. I don't, Ian, do you think there'll be a 601 spread? 7, 10, a 1001? How deep does this go? 501 is our cap, is what I'm seeing in your face.
I think this is it.
Okay. Well, 501, we are here to talk about the spread again, only this time we're kind of putting everything together. At 101, we talked about the basics of the spread, what it even means. Then we got into the tight end position, how that influences not only the type of quarterback that you're running with, whether they're a dual threat or more of a passing quarterback. We talked about the force multipliers on the outside, those wide receivers that can really cause a lot of damage in a spread offense. Then we went over to 401 and we talked about the challenges that the spread faces the closer it gets to the goal line and maybe some solutions for that. This is 501. This is putting the entire package together. What that means, how a team can employ this type of philosophy to essentially minimize the risk that any defense may be giving them. So, Ian, if you could, really, really quickly, what is the short summation of a spread 501 mentality?
I titled this one Bum Hunting with Hybrids.
Okay.
That's a reference to a poker term. Oh, do you know that one?
I'm unfamiliar.
Bum hunting is where you look for opportunities to play hands against the bad players at a table. You find the suckers and you pile up a stack of chips by just outplaying the suckers at the table.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm with you.
The through line is that when you have a dual threat tight end in a dual threat quarterback in the spread offense, you can just always play to the weakest players on the defense. You can hunt the bums on the defense. The guys that can't play the run, you force them to play the run. Better still, the guys that can't run and cover, you make them run and cover. And you can, if you have a dual threat tight end that's really versatile, you can hunt their weakest defenders with your best receivers.
And this is something that we hear a lot, certainly in the punditry, that Sark does very well, is finding the weak spot or the weak maybe even player in a particular defense and exploiting that. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, he calls it the guy who's taxed. He finds taxed. the guy that the defensive scheme taxes. Like, what he obviously must mean by that is the guy who's being asked to do too much. He finds that guy and then he figures out which task it is that guy has to do that he's either misaligned for or he's just not personally up to. And then Sark makes him do it, right? That you can do that from a lot of different offensive styles, but the spread makes it very simple and straightforward, particularly when you have the dual threat quarterback and the dual threat tight end.
So, and again, let's focus on, I think everybody understands what a dual threat quarterback is, passing and throwing. A dual threat tight end, blocking and catching. Is that fair?
Yeah. They need to be, there's two different ways it can go. When the quarterback is a dual threat, you can get away, as we covered in spread 201, when the quarterback is a dual threat, you can get away with a tight end who's maybe a great receiver for a big guy, but not as great of a blocker. But really all you need is for the tight end to be like passably good at a few blocking assignments and then to know how to line up and run routes from a large number of different alignments on the field. When he knows how to do that, then you can move him around to hunt matchups, not for him, but for your good receivers. We'll get into that in a minute. So like it doesn't, you can do this stuff with like a Rob Gronkowski and really cause enormous problems for defense. And in the NFL, that's probably a little more necessary. You want that like truly great receiving tight end who's a major matchup problem. But in the college game, as long as he knows how to line up at different places, you can put him out there and force the defense to cover him with somebody and then make hay with a different. You can hunt the bum with somebody else.
Well, let's look at a diagram of what that tight end flex might look like. You want to walk us through this one?
So a lot of times, like your normal tight end alignment, when you flex him out, is people imagine him just like lined up out in the slot. where he's just like a little outside of the box more than he would be if he were in a normal tight end spot. But where you can really do damage as a defense is you put that tight end somewhere unorthodox. If you put him all the way out on the bottom, then the defense gets put in a really bad spot where either they send out a safety or a linebacker to cover him, and then those guys are not where they're used to being, and they may not know the rules of how to play out there, or they're not able to help in the box against the run like they're supposed to. Or you cover him with the cornerback who knows exactly what he's supposed to do and how, and all the routes that he could face and how to cover him. But now you're using your cornerback to cover a tight end. And then, like, the Z receiver is now in the slot. If the Z receiver is your best receiver and now he's inside matched up against not your best coverage guy, then you're playing at a disadvantage.
Before we move on, I want to hear really quickly from one of our sponsors.
I'm just going to say, guys, you probably need a fiduciary financial advisor. And I've got the guy for you. His name is David McClellan with Forum Financial. He works broadly and deeply with his clients as a financial life coach. And he should know something about coaching because he won several national championships as a swimmer for the University of Texas. He specializes in financial planning and has contributed numerous articles to Kipling on the topic of retirement tax bombs. So contact David today to be your fiduciary financial planner and schedule a 1-hour consultation to assess your financial situations. The free consultation is available, so just give him a call. The number is 312-933-8823. That's 312-933-8823. His email is also in the description below.
All right, Ian, so we talked a little bit about the tight end there. Now, another way we can spread folks out is just literally spreading the entire width of the field with receivers. So let's look at what this might look like.
Yeah, so this is basically the exact same as before, only now we've created the same dilemma on the top, and the running back is also flexed out all the way to the sideline. Again, you have to teach your running back how to do that. But usually it's like if you just send him out there and just have him run a quick hitch or a flat route, you're holding the attention of a defender. And then they're either having to, again, line up a linebacker in an unorthodox spot in order to preserve matchups with the corners on the good receivers, or they're wasting their good cornerback out there. And if you can run like a go route, so like let's say they took their Mike linebacker, the M, or their weak side linebacker, the W, and they send him out, and they're like, no, you're not playing this game with us. Our linebacker will stay covering the running back, and our corner will stay on the receiver. Okay. Can that linebacker turn and run with the running back if the running back just runs a go down the field? Are you going to use your safety to help cover the running back and then leave the corners one-on-one with the receivers inside where there's more space for the receivers to work in? It causes all kinds of problems when you do this because you're not playing by the normal rules of the game. It's asymmetrical. Most teams do this at least a little bit.
Sure.
It's hard to do it all the time because you need a veteran quarterback and you got to cross train all your skill players to do it. So most teams don't want to do it unless it's like either their third down strategy or they're just all in and this is how they move the ball. Most teams would rather just like run play action and run the ball than do this. But if they do this, mega, mega problems can be caused for the defense.
So let's talk about that a little bit when you do have, let's go five wide now, but let's talk about having a dual threat. What does that look like now that you've added a dual threat quarterback element to this?
This is another challenge, which is that if they, let's say they just like spread everybody out and play the safeties back, and they're like, fine, you're going to do crazy stuff. We're going to keep our matchup strong and we're going to drop our safeties back. So we're not going to give you easy matchups underneath. We're going to keep our safeties back to make sure there's no disasters over the top where our linebacker can't run with the tight end or whatever. Well, if you have a dual threat quarterback, now there's nobody in the box. So now you just run the ball to the quarterback. I drew something here that's like a duo or draw or something. It doesn't really matter. There's a million ways you can do it, but you're playing 6-on-4 between the quarterback and the five linemen and the four defenders in the box. And if they've spread out wide their linebackers, then the first guys to come help in the box might be guys that are not much help.
Yeah, right. That's fair. Well, let's – all right. So we went through three different versions of this, right? We have the tight end spreading out wide, five wide as much as we can. We talked about the dual threat quarterback here. Let's see what happens, and we're going to go into 11 personnel here. If you don't know what that is, please check out the other video. And let's see this in action. So right here, this is Arch versus Mississippi State. We are five wide. There is no running back in the backfield here.
He's on the bottom, I believe. Somewhere lined up out wide.
So talk us through this. This is exactly what you were just describing. The threat, and we'll remember, the threat of Arch running now has been established. That was established in the UTSA game. It was very clear that this is a potential problem for defenses that must be accounted for. So what do we got here, Ian?
So they stretch out. The tight end is on the top. I think it's the running back on bottom. And then the three receivers get good matchups inside. And so Mississippi State just get outmatched with DeAndre Moore, who's the second guy from the top, against somebody that cannot run with DeAndre Moore. Well, I don't even remember exactly who it is. It could have been almost anybody because most people can't run with DeAndre Moore.
it's a fair point.
This is the problem with five wide, is that maybe you could cover DeAndre Moore in a normal conventional defense where you have the corner and then the safety shades over to help on anything inside or whatever. But you can't help on everybody when it's five wide. So the safeties get overtaxed, as I guess Sark would like to say. And what happens here is DeAndre Moore gets to run a slot fade where he's just normal. The way you defend this fade route is you try to bump the receiver in out of bounds before he can get on a good fast line, and you use space against him. You use the sideline as a defender and you use space against him. When you run the fade route from the slot, there's no, you don't have the sideline. The receiver has all the space in the world to just find a line and then just get going fast. And so it's extremely hard to defend. And then it's impossible to send help because everybody's stretched out wide. And maybe another thing I should have said earlier, when you can run this from 11 personnel with your running back and your tight end on the field all the time, the defense cannot get into packages that make it easier to stop this stuff because they're still worried that you're going to just line up and run a conventional running play. So they keep their normal conventional defense on the field. Like, people are always asked, like, how come Texas doesn't play with four receivers, or how come Texas doesn't play with five receivers and just create all these matchup problems? Well, because then the defense will not respect the run, and then they'll just cheat to stop it at whatever cost. When you have a tight end and a running back still on the field, they can't do that, or you're just going to trample them and with the most simple runs in your playbook. Because of that, DeAndre Moore gets one-on-one in a ton of space. And we've all seen this play a million times. Arch Manning drops a bomb over the top,
as is his wont.
And they're blitzing and they're trying to confuse him, but it's really hard to confuse the quarterback about what's going on when he has five receivers out wide. Because there's only so many defensive looks you can give him without giving up the game of who's on who and who's helping where. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. It's like we were talking about earlier. This is a prime example of, you know, taxing an opponent in a position that makes it difficult for them to do the things that they want to do. It should also be noted that if you watched spread 401, you may note that this is also happening between the 20s, right? So this gives us a little bit more opportunity to take advantage of those force multipliers on the outside with space.
Do you know who the best team ever to do this was?
Given your proclivities, I'm going to go with the Steelers.
No.
No, I'm just kidding.
As it happens, the team to do this the most effectively in college football history is also, in my opinion, the greatest college football team of all time.
We're talking about Burrow's team?
Burrow's team. In 2019, LSU did this. They did five wide all the time. I heard a hilarious story of Dave Aranda talking about it, where he said he was walking back from the practices in that spring when they installed this. And he was like, and the offensive coaches were all arguing because they like hired some hotshot young offensive coordinator that helped install all of this. And some of the old offensive coaches were like, we don't want to do this. Like, this is risky. If we have all five guys out of the box all the time, how are we going to protect Burrow? Shouldn't we be running the ball? We're LSU. And he's like, and it was a fight to get everyone on board with doing it. Because it's asymmetrical, it's unconventional, so you get all these advantages from it, but you have to be committed. And then Joe Burrow threw for 5,671 yards,
yeah.
60 touchdowns to 6 interceptions, 10.8 yards per attempt. LSU scored 48.4 points a game, won all 15 games, and demolished everyone.
Yeah, they worked everybody like a part-time job.
They had really good players.
Well, sure. Okay. But
that this style, to me, is the highest form of offense we've ever seen in the game of football. When you can nail these things like I'm describing, the defenses are not built to stop it. It causes them all kinds of problems, and it's just you're putting it all together in spread 501. This is the highest level. It's very difficult to do. When you do it, it's almost impossible to stop.
I honestly never thought we'd see another Top Gun movie, so I'm not going to say we're not going to get a 601, but I have to say we've kind of peaked here. This is where it all comes together. This is what every little element of the spread offense, as far as this teaching series is concerned, has come to. We thank you guys for being here. We really appreciate it. Watch these in succession as we go into the season. This should give you a really good understanding of at least what the offense is trying to do, the things that they want to do. So when you're watching it and you're seeing that maybe if they're having a little bit of a struggle there, you might understand why. On behalf of young Ian, not that I need to do this on his behalf. Do you want to say goodbye to the people, Ian? Okay, I can't cut you off. It's literally a recording.
Watch out for a spread 601.
Oh, there it is. We've planted the seed.
Top Gun Maverick.
We've planted the seed. Join us at InsideTexas.com. We really appreciate you being here. Thanks so much.